You are listening to Charlotte Real Estate Talk with Pridemore Properties.
Hello, Scott Pridemore here with Mike Hagee for another episode of Charlotte Real Estate Talk. Today, we would like to welcome Michael Trivette with College Transitions. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's our pleasure. So, let's get right into it. You have a lot of fantastic information to share for parents with children of all ages, really, because so much of what is currently in my awareness is how do I make sure that I'm properly set up for our daughter's transition from high school to college. Mm-hmm. So can you just share with us a little bit about college transitions and what you do and your specialty and the value you bring to the table for parents such as myself?
Yeah. And you said a good thing earlier when you just said you're preparing your daughter for that transition from high school to college. That's what the name is all about, college transition. So it's really about getting families and students prepared to make that transition, but also making them aware of the opportunities that lie ahead. And if they want to explore, depending on what they want to explore and what they want to pursue, we tell them what's most important to focus on while in high school. So, you know, we start with students as early as the freshman year of high school, believe it or not, just because there's a lot that goes into this. You know, as you guys are, you're starting to become aware with your own student, high school course planning, extracurricular planning, things that your daughter may be doing in terms of test prep, when to start doing those things. There's a lot of stuff that takes place over the course of the high school career to where it's not just the fall semester of the senior year when applications go live. There's a lot of work that goes on before that. And so just making families, you know, aware of when to do certain action items, what types of things to be focusing on at different points in different grade levels. And obviously, you know, start to talk about colleges. And if you want to aim for certain types of schools, here's what you need to do. Here's what's most important. Here's when you need to do those things. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's not as straightforward as when all of us around this table were applying to colleges many moons ago. So the process is a little bit different right now.
Yeah. Well, I also feel like, you know, through this effort and this exercise, you're able to really dial in what is going to work best for your child and your family.
Yeah.
And
it's totally true. You know, we have a lot of students that come to us in the senior year, you know, right before senior year starts, because maybe the process is a little bit overwhelming. And for those students, we can't do as much for them in terms of going back and changing anything. But if I get a student that comes to me in the freshman and sophomore year, I really know everything about them and what they've been doing up to the point of application. So for me, my job is easier because I can position them to certain schools where I think they're just going to be the perfect fit. So it's a little, that's where some of that timing issue comes into play as well.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm sure a lot of parents come to you thinking they're fully well prepared, but they come to find out that, oh gosh, I kind of missed the boat. I'm in that now. My oldest son is 17. So he's going to be starting his senior year. Yeah. So for someone like me and for those that are maybe missed the timing, where do you begin with that, you know, senior student?
Yeah. And believe it or not, we have students and families that come to us in the spring of the senior year who may have overshot the moon in the applications and it didn't work out the way they had planned or envisioned. Those are some of the harder cases because you have to dial back expectations at that point significantly. And the kind of colleges that those students may have access to at that point are not even close to what they likely would have had access to had they had somebody in their corner that sort of knew what was going on in college admissions. So, yeah. But for the seniors that come to us, you know, early in the fall semester, there are things that we can do, certainly. And it's really about finding that good fit school for them and making them aware of the opportunities that schools that are going to be, you know, really good fits, but also schools where they have a really good chance of earning admission. Schools that, you know, they're more or less like the average applicant, but also have some of those reach schools on there as well. So we just want to make sure that every student, regardless of their background, that they have a well-balanced college list. You just want them to have options.
Yep. That's fantastic. So let's, if you don't mind, let's press the, that's a really good sort of start intro, but tell us a little bit of about how you came to be in this role.
Yeah.
How'd you get your start in this?
Yeah, it's kind of funny to think back on it. I was just mentioning this to somebody the other day. I was a broadcast major in undergrad, had never planned to go into college counseling. Through doing that, I realized that broadcasting, while I enjoyed certain elements of it, it maybe wasn't the best career choice for me. Mm-hmm. But as a high school student, I thought it was. I stuck with it in college because I did enjoy it. And there were certainly parts of it that were very beneficial for me. But I also was exposed through some various roles I had at the undergraduate school I was attending. I was exposed to higher education and college admissions in particular. I was fascinated by the world of college admissions. Appalachian
hold
State.
Hold on. Yeah. What'd you say?
I was fascinated by the world of college admissions. And I still am.
That's fantastic that you are.
Yeah, I still am.
Okay. Yeah. That's a big seed as to why you're successful at what you do.
Yeah. It's such a dynamic place. Institutions are so different from one another. The students that go to them are also very different. That's why this work for me is awesome, because every student is different. So every day is different. You know, it's not the same monotonous work for me every day. I get to work with students who are really driven and motivated students, but also, you know, they're nervous. They're anxious about the process, mm-hmm. you know. And so being able to help calm some of those fears for both the student and the family, that's huge for us. But going back on what I was saying, you know, I was at App and Appalachian State, and I was working in admissions as a graduate student. I was doing a master's degree there in education. And Appalachian beat Michigan in football, and I was mm-hmm. stunned at how a football game could really change enrollment management at one school, because it really put App on the map outside of the Southeast. And so I started doing some research on, well, is anybody researching this type of phenomenon? You know, is anybody looking at how athletics affects, you know, higher education and admissions, college admissions? And there was a gentleman at the University of Georgia who was studying that and was kind of the leading scholar when it came to how institutions leverage athletics for different goals that
and
they may
some
have.
Some are really, really good at it.
Some are really good.
And some are sort of slow to grasp that concept.
And some are slow to grasp that concept. That's right. So, but that led me to UGA, where I pursued a PhD in higher education. While I was there, I met a colleague in my cohort, Andrew Belasco, who's actually one of my partners at College Transitions. We shared background in college admissions. He had worked on the high school side of it, had some degrees in counseling as well. He had a buddy from Philadelphia from his time there who also worked in a high school setting. And we just basically, this is one of those business stories where we came together around a dinner table, wrote out a plan for what we wanted to do and how we wanted to execute it. And we started it as graduate students and just kept it rolling from there.
Wow.
So
that's fantastic. Yeah. So now back where we left off, let's talk a little bit about timing and, mm-hmm. and what is the best timing to start for someone that needs help. They recognize they need help and they want some direction, and for those folks to inquire with you.
Yeah.
What is that sweet spot in timing? Yeah.
I would generally say in between sophomore and junior year. And the reason being is by that point, students should have a better sense of obviously their high school setting and some of the activities that they're involved with there. That's generally when students start taking AP classes. They may have been exposed to one or two in the sophomore year, but more of the advanced college level coursework will take place in the junior year. So they'll have access to honors, AP, or IB if they have an IB program at their high school. And so we want to make sure they're taking the right courses over the junior year, but also that's when they're going to start standardized testing. So ACT, SAT, they'll take AP exams at the end of the junior year, possibly subject tests depending on the student and the types of schools they're going for. So we just want to lay out a good roadmap of when to take certain tests and, again, what types of scores to shoot for based on the schools that they start to think about. And then over the course of the junior year, too, we can actually start to shape that college list. So, for example, for most of my students, I'm initially going to propose a school list of, I'd say, between 15 and 25 schools that they should just check out on their own time, okay? And then based on their feedback, them working with their parents on some of the kind of the absolutes they definitely want on their college experience, I'll get some of that information. They'll tell me schools that they don't like versus schools they do like, and we can kind of shape that college list. So I may throw in some additions and take away some schools. And then eventually by the course of by the start of the senior year, in between junior and senior year, we work to finalize that list, because I'll have all the junior year grades. I'll have an updated test score profile, and I can sort of give them a sense of, all right, let's plan on applying to 7 to 10 colleges. And inside of that 7 to 10, you have 2 to 3 likely schools where your, you know, admission is very favorable for you based on your profile. two to three or three to four target schools where you're more or less like the average applicant. So the decision could really go either way. It's a 50-50 shot. And then two or three reach schools where admission's certainly not a guarantee and it's not even likely. But nevertheless, based on your profile, you still have a chance. And who knows? Maybe an ACT or SAT score goes up, strong first semester grades, and one of those reach schools could be maybe a target for you at that point, or target/reach. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you just, like I said, when decision letters start coming back in the spring of a student's senior year, you just want them to have options.
Okay, sure, yeah. Sure. You mentioned strengthen your profile. That's something. So testing.
Right.
GPA.
Yeah.
What else?
Course rigor. Making sure that
quality courses.
Yeah, that you're taking rigorous courses in your high school. High school context matters a lot, guys. You know, that's why some high schools rank, some schools don't, because they realize it can create somewhat of a toxic environment in some high schools and some communities. But colleges want to see that students are taking challenging courses available to them, especially if you're applying to selective colleges.
Right.
And then relative to your peers, you know, how are you performing? So that's everything. A lot of students and families sometimes think that, you know, my kid goes to, high school in Charlotte, Ardue Cal or West Charlotte. There might be a family in West Charlotte High School that says, how am I going to stack up against a top student at Myers Park? Well, it's not like that. You're being compared against students at West Charlotte and what's available to you. So that's where high school context matters a ton, you know, because families sometimes mistake it and say, well, am I being compared to Johnny or Susie down the street who attends a different high school? That's not the case at all.
Wow. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How does that work then with your process? Do you have an assessment and create a profile based on those items? But then what happens from there?
Yeah, we do. So we send that assessment out in between the junior and senior year. For the families that come to us early in the senior year, obviously we send that as soon as we get their transcripts, test scores, their extracurricular profile. We've been fortunate. We've worked with students all over the country because we're remote based. So we have a good sense of what high schools are like in certain places. And also, you know, selective colleges and what their admission practices are and what types of students they typically go for in certain types of programs. So it's really having a good knowledge base of the high schools and the students that you're working with, but also the institutions to which they're applying.
So when we talk about a profile, obviously the obvious factors, as we've discussed, the GPA, testing, where they rank in their given school, the rigorous coursework.
Yeah.
What are some other maybe wild card factors that come into play that are just beyond the obvious?
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, this is probably some of the most fun work that we actually do, is sort of help students choose what's most important to focus on outside of the classroom or possibly related to what you want to study in college. So those extracurricular activities, because there's this common myth out there about well-roundedness. Okay. And so students and families think that, all right, my kid needs to be doing A, B, C, D, X, Y, and Z, right? Like 10 different things. That's not the case at all. And in fact, you can go insane doing that, right? Like you only have so many hours in the day, and students are busier now, I feel like, than they ever have been before. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, media rhetoric and sensationalism out there about, you know, elite colleges and what you need to do to get in and stuff like that. And so we just try to tone that down a bit. And basically tell students, this is what's most important to focus on. Focus on two or three activities, whatever it is, but dive deeply inside of those things. Mm-hmm. That's the chance. That offers the chance for you to earn distinctions, awards, leadership responsibilities, things like that. Sure. Those are the things that are going to move the needle on the application. Mm-hmm. And it's also places where you can actually talk about those things and those experiences in a college essay, right? Responding to a school's essay prompts.
Sure.
Saying, you know, just kind of providing more context about who you are as a person and why you may be a good fit for that institution based on the things that you've been doing in high school and outside of classroom.
Are you involved through the entire process then? So those college prompts come back they're welcome back for maybe an additional visit. Are you not visiting with these kids so they go to the school, but you're guiding them, you're consulting through the entire process until they find the college they want.
Start to finish, to the point in which they actually enroll in the college. So even if a student gets into a school and they actually decide where they want to matriculate and they put down the deposit, we'll tell them, all right, this is what you need to do to hit the ground running when you get to that school. Again, it's college transitions. It's getting you from high school to college, because the acceptance letter is only one part of the deal, right? Like, you got to go there and you got to be successful. So making them aware of the opportunities that exist on campus. And we have some of those conversations even before students make decisions too. So, yeah.
So referencing going deep with those extracurriculars.
Yeah.
Give us a few examples. I know everything's it's different for different people, but
yeah.
Can you just give us a few that come to mind?
Yeah. I have a student here in Charlotte. It's a great example. So she wants to go into computer science, right? And she's been interning at a local tech organization. And she's really cut back on some of the other things that she's been doing that are not really related to her major, but she thought she had to do it just to kind of stand out in the application process. So we found that she was doing 5 or 6 different things, but she was really spread so thin. And so I told her, I said, all right, let's focus on your tech work that you're going to be doing with your internship. Focus on your test scores, do your test prep. And then do the music stuff, because you also enjoy music. And that's something that sure. speaks about yeah. you in the application. It's something you've been doing your entire life. So she's doing her 2 or 3 things. And that's going to offer her the chance to really, you know, gain some leadership responsibility in that internship. She's also tutoring students related to that subject as well. So she's doing plenty.
Wow.
So that's a perfect example. It's really teaching students what's most important to focus on. But mm-hmm. there's other students, too, that may be doing research with a faculty member or a research team within their high school or college, a local setting, some type of summer program where they had a really good experience that may have opened their eyes to different things that they want to explore. Obviously, you have athletes who are very involved in athletics. You have people that have jobs that are doing that type of work, too. So, like I said, extracurriculars can be anything, but it just needs to be only a few things, not a whole lot.
Certainly. So curious, how much does parental pressure play into one school choice?
It can be a lot. And that's why it's important for parents to realize that there are boundaries. You know, this is the student's process. It's totally okay for the parents to be involved, and they should be involved, right? But at the end of the day, this is the student's life. This is them they're going to be the ones doing the work in college. They're the ones, you know, yeah. hopefully going to earn that degree, get that internship, that job out of that school. So you have to let them take ownership of the process.
So,
you know?
So it, on that note, how much of your counseling is direct to parent versus direct to child?
Yeah, it depends on the family.
Yeah.
Yeah. sure. And listen, I you know, when I send correspondence emails to my students, I copy the parents. I want them to be in the loop on things. I want them to know the type of things that we're discussing, the work that we're doing. And during the meetings, you know, if we're on Skype or a video chat and I'm meeting with the student, the parents are more than welcome to join. They're going to have questions inevitably. So, but at the end of the day, you know, it needs to be the student's process, because they're the ones submitting the applications. They have to write the essays. That's a key part. Okay. Students have to write the essays, because college admissions counselors are savvy people. Mm-hmm. They know it when a 17-year-old or 18-year-old writes an essay versus someone who's wow. 45 or 50 yep. and maybe writes professionally in their job, mm-hmm. right? So they can pick up on that almost instantly.
Sure.
You know? And so we have to just sort of communicate to parents and students, all right, this is a student's process. You got to take ownership of it. You know, yep. that's important.
Yeah, that's great. And then go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, no, I have a question on in-state, out-of-state.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big question for a lot of parents. You know, their dream school is out of state,
right?
But they live obviously in North right. Carolina. I mean, how does that play into that process of yeah. scholarship monies and FAFSA and that whole yeah. complicated world of yeah. financing?
Yeah. Great question. Well, you know, we're in an awesome spot because we're in North Carolina, which has long history of strong public support for higher education, public higher education. So 16 public four-year institutions in North Carolina, some of the most affordable higher education you can find anywhere. I mean, if you look at our Dataverse page, we have a cost of attendance table that families can sort and see that, all right, this is full cost of attendance if you're looking at these colleges. Well, right at the top are UNC system schools. You know, the UNC Chapel Hills, the Appalachian States, the NC States, UNC Wilmington's, UNC Charlotte's, et cetera. So a lot of good in-state affordable options here, no matter what you want to study. And you also have a benefit because constitutionally these schools are protected for in-state students. So the freshman class at every four-year in-state institution has to be at least 82%.
Okay.
So the out-of-state enrollment cannot exceed 18% for the incoming freshman class at any public school in North Carolina. So as a result, your in-state students are protected at all of those schools, and you have an admissions advantage in that sense. So again, really good options here. Nevertheless, if you are looking outside of the state, financially, you need to be able to justify that. Or, you know, if you don't mind paying, if you come from a family with means and you want to go to a certain school out of state and you can financially justify that, certainly that's an opportunity for you. But if there are other schools that you're sort of making a financial decision, you're weighing it against the in-state schools or in-state private schools, financially, they need to be offering you substantial, you know, financial aid. And there are many schools that do that, you know, outside the state. It's just knowing sort of how you stack up grades-wise, test scores-wise, and whether or not you're going to qualify for some of that merit-based aid. Generally speaking, we tell students if you're aiming for some of that merit-based aid that those schools give, you need to be in the 75th percentile or higher for the average admitted applicant. Just because if you're not, if you're below that 50% or the 25th percentile, you're not as competitive as some of the other students applying, so you may not qualify for that money.
Sure. So in reference to out-of-state versus in-state, you mentioned that that college transitions, you're nationwide?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so you've helped people from how many states? I mean,
35 plus.
Okay,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
I mean, I've had students in Big Fork, Montana. I mean, most rural area where this student actually was an amazing case because she got into some really, really good elite schools, you know, Harvard's, Princeton's, et cetera. She didn't have a single AP in her class in her high school. They didn't offer them.
Wow.
There were 50 students in graduating class.
Wow.
So we've had students like that versus the students who attend high schools with, you know, 800 plus graduating seniors. You know, some of the high schools down there in Atlanta and stuff like that. So, yeah, we work with students all over the country, which has been awesome because, you work with colleges all over the country.
So let's talk about that. Yeah. So you work with multitude of colleges throughout the country. How do you stay up to date with what each college has to offer and how that might be best suited for a student you're working with?
Yeah, well, fortunately, having earned a PhD in higher education, I was exposed to colleges earlier than most people. Working in college admissions, I had those networks already established, although that was mostly regional. I learned a lot about colleges across the country in my graduate coursework because we were doing research using data sets that was pulling institutional data from schools all over the country. So also worked for the USG system down in Georgia. So when you work in a system level office, not only do you learn about your system, but you learn about other university systems in different states. So just being exposed to that early on, but also just staying, staying in tune with what's going on in the higher education college admissions landscape, you know, subscribing to different trade journals and publications and staying abreast with what's going on Twitter and what are the reporters writing about in the Chronicle of Higher Ed and Washington Post and things like that. So, and then I get a lot of information sent to me from colleges and stuff. If they're changing, you know, certain admission policies, maybe they're instituting a early decision deadline, which they haven't had ever or before, or have thrown away for a while, or they are going test optional or things like that, or they're moving application dates, just staying in tune with what's going on at different colleges.
Yeah. Yeah. And you wrote a book along the way.
Yeah, so my partners wrote a book. It came out, I want to say 2015, 2016. It's called The Enlightened College Applicant. It was a Amazon bestseller there for a while. And it's really a great book for students starting at any point in the application process, but it presents kind of this big picture view of what students need to focus on in college admissions and what they need to do through the course of their high school career to set themselves up for a successful transition to college. And then we're writing a new book right now that's going to come out in April or May. Also going to be the same publisher on that. That's Roman and Littlefield. We're actually working on the title right now. So I was actually just speaking to my partners right before we hopped in here. So we're working on the title a bit, but basically it's going to be, if you're familiar with the college guide, like a FISC college guide or Princeton Review college guide, it's going to be similar to that, except this first edition for us is going to focus on about 130 schools. Namely, these are really selective schools, but also schools that do just a ton for their current students and their graduates. outcomes. It's all based on outcomes. So it's helping students get jobs. It's helping them place in certain careers and internships and things like that. Also successful schools in terms of when students get there, they're likely to persist. They're likely to graduate, things like that. So whereas a FIS college guide might give you, let's say, 10, 15 different data points for a school, we're going to give you about 60 or 70. And we're also going to write a, you know, a 1500, 1600 word profile in each school to kind of take you into what that school has to offer for you. So again, this first book is going to have about 130 schools in it. And then we're going to have a book that comes out maybe a year or two after. We're already in the planning stages for that, where we're going to focus on the other schools that more students have access to. The lesser competitive schools, nevertheless, still selective schools, but just not like elite institutions that only admit, you know, 10% of their applicant pool.
Sure.
So the kind of schools that, yes, it's okay to focus on the really selective schools too, and you want to aim for schools like that, but also you need to be realistic, and here's the other schools that could also present a very good fit if you're not able to get into a top college.
So quick, I want your opinion on something.
Yeah.
I've noticed, and I don't know anyone that has kids at this school, but uh-huh. It seems like High Point University has been, there's just been so much going on in the news, or I'll read the Business Journal. There's always something.
Yeah.
And prior to 10 years ago, I never saw or heard about High Point.
Yeah.
What has caused that growth and popularity?
High Point's a really interesting case. And I would actually encourage you to do some research and some Googling after you get out of here today. It's a school where I think their president is probably the third highest paid president of all institutions across the country. They've taken on an incredible amount of debt to build that campus and to offer amenities that you would have a hard time finding at similarly competitive institutions.
Okay.
I believe I read an article maybe a couple years ago where their Moody's credit score was actually lowered as a result. So negatively impacted, at least. And so they've had a lot of people wondering what's going on there. You know, it's definitely not a bad school. I just don't know enough about what's going on there currently. But I know that there has been a lot of researchers wondering, you know, is this the right model? Because I believe they had a lot of faculty that were adjunct faculty too, that were more or less like part-time faculty. So not full-time faculty. I think there's a high percentage of adjunct faculty there. So the working conditions there for the faculty are also not what you would expect at a school that's investing that type of money. And then you have a lot of full-paying students who choose to come there because maybe they get on campus and they like what they see. They've talked to faculty or students. They feel like it's a good fit for them. And so they apply, but they may not be the type of family that would qualify for financial aid assistance. So maybe they're paying full freight. So if the institution, from the institution standpoint, if that's the type of student they're attracting and they're putting all that money into those investments and amenities that may attract that student, then they might be achieving their goal.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I thought it was just interesting. It looked like, at least from what the publications I was reading, like it's a school that's on the move, it's on the rise, and it's gaining in popularity. I was just interested.
And it could. And that's the thing. So, you know, it's a risk, right? Like anything's a risk if you're doing that kind of investing early on. But let's say they get a really high-achieving student coming in for several years, you know? So their applicant pool starts to change, right? Like they went from attracting a student that was maybe in-state or a regional student who wanted to go to a private school, and it felt like that school was a good fit for them. But all of a sudden, they took on all this debt, and they invested in all these things to try to attract a different type of student. But many of those students may have attended good private schools, good public schools, could be a high-achieving student. They start to bring them down. Well, that starts to change the student body over time. And so then you start to have a more selective student body, a more academically prepared student body for the rigors of a four-year college degree. Maybe the graduation rates start to improve. Maybe the retention rates, the persistence rates start to improve. So over time, maybe you become a better institution because of the inputs that you have. The students are becoming better over time. So it could happen. It's an interesting case, I think, that a lot of people in higher education are following right now because they want to see, will it work?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned a word or a couple words, full freight. Mm-hmm. And the full freight being the full rate that someone is charged, as if they're going out of state or obviously in state, that plays a role. But what are some situations where you've been able to successfully have that lowered? Can you negotiate with a college offer letter? Can you speak to that?
Great question. And a lot of families think that you can't. And they could be wrong. So there are a lot of cases where we've worked with students and we've helped them apply to maybe a school they didn't even know about. But it's a school that we knew for them, it could be financially advantageous and it would offer them a chance to earn significant merit-based aid. And so that student would come back to me, that family would come back to me and say, hey, Michael, just want to let you know, we applied to that school and here's the financial aid package we got. And we're pretty happy, but we're waiting to hear from the other schools too. I said, okay, great. So we see what the other schools have to offer. Those letters come in. And if they're similarly competitive institutions and one school offers much more merit-based aid, you can go back to the negotiating table with another school and you say, guess what? You know, we really like your school. And in fact, you know, this is my son's top choice. He wants to go here. But school X is offering us $10,000 more per year. This is $40,000 in 4 years. Can you match it or beat it? Some schools will do that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great information.
Yeah.
That's
some schools won't. So you got to know how to negotiate the process a little bit too, because a lot of families mistakenly believe once they get the financial aid package, it's set in stone. That's not necessarily the case, especially at private institutions. At public institutions, it could be, because they only have a certain amount of financial aid they can dole out. But for many of those private schools, yes, you know. But you can't go necessarily, I want to qualify that and say, you can't take a moderately selective private school and go to a school that's a very selective private school, like a Vanderbilt, for example, and say, oh, we have school X giving us, you know, this amount of money, can you match it? They're going to laugh you out the door. But if it's a similarly competitive institution, you can certainly compare those financial aid awards.
Wow.
So quick question with regard to, you know, choice, the student's first choice, their perception of where they want to go, and how certain kids, I would imagine, just from having have friends that have seniors or have recently gone to college, how a child has really blinders and just really dialed in. How do you get them to open up their horizon to other opportunities and to project out beyond just one school?
Good question. And that can sometimes be a challenge. You know, these students think about the environment they grow up in, right? And the bubbles that they grow up in, the communities, right? Like sometimes it's a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And
I mean, let's face it, Tar Heel. I mean, so many people are dialed in. They want to be a Tar Heel.
Yeah. And some of these high schools, like, you know, let's think about the high schools in the Charlotte area since we're here. You know, you got Argykell, Myers Park, Marvin Ridge, Providence, et cetera. I mean, these high schools, many of them send over at the senior class, you'll have 300 plus applicants apply to Chapel Hill alone. You know, and they all can't get in there. And these are really good students, you know. So to tell a student with a 1350, 1400 SAT that they're not good enough to get into Chapel Hill and they have A's and B's, you know, and they're ranked in the top 15% of their class, that's a tough conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, especially when, like you said, maybe they're a legacy. Maybe a mom or dad went there, family members. They got tons of friends going there, you know, and so you have to have those conversations early just to set realistic expectations of what may happen in the admissions process, because let's face it, it's not an absolute science. Mm-hmm. We try our best, but we're not in the admissions committee room. We're not making those decisions. Those are hard decisions to make. So as a result, we do have those contingency plans, those backup plans. We start making students aware of other good fit schools that could be a good opportunity for them based on what they want to study and what they want to pursue in the event that one of those, you know, top colleges on their list doesn't work out. And I want to be clear too, like for all of our students, our goal is to have several likely schools where they're just as excited about that school as their REACH school. That's what you want.
Sure.
Now that doesn't always happen.
Right.
But that's what we're aiming for.
Yeah. Fantastic stuff. So for folks that are listening that want more information, how can they connect with you?
Yeah, our website is collegetransitions.com. I'm also local to the Charlotte area. We have an office here in Hooga. So, collegetransitions.com. Go on our website, check us out. Got a lot of free information related there on related to college admissions in the Dataverse section. We have a blog that we write pretty extensively, at least an article a week. They can sign up for newsletters. There's a lot of free info on there. But if you want to learn more about us, just go to the website.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow, we sure appreciate
it. Yeah.
I mean, we can go on and on here. yeah, a lot of valuable information. I feel like our listeners will get and be able to carry forward with their experience helping their children transition, key word. So thank you so much, Michael, for joining us. I'm Scott with Mike Hagee for another episode of Charlotte Real Estate Talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
Listen, download our podcast, or find out more about Charlotte Real Estate at PrideMoreProperties.com.